The Michigan Festival of Sacred Music is now the Connecting Chords Music Festival. It starts this weekend with a concert by the Bahar Ensemble with Orchestra Rua at First Baptist Church at 6 p.m. on Friday night. Today, I'll be talking to Chicago musician Melissa Nahn of Fifth House Ensemble. Their performance is coming up Sunday at 7:30 p.m. at Kalamazoo College's Dalton Theater. Fifth House Ensemble will be performing a program called Degenerate Art. It's based on music censored, banned, and deemed degenerate by various regimes. I spoke with Melissa and asked her about how she became interested in new music.
So I was, in high school, a very strange bird from the perspective that I was really interested in playing the flute at a high level, but also had a strong academic side to what I was doing and studying at the time. And when I had the opportunity to apply for music schools, the Eastman School of Music was my first choice because I loved the idea of studying with Bonnie Boyd, and also because they had an arts leadership program there, which I believe was about 5 years old at the time that I entered. It was one of the first programs of its kind. So being a part of the arts leadership program was really an opportunity for me to explore questions around the role of classical music in the modern landscape and ways that musicians can be useful in the world around us, even outside of performance and education. It also built my skills as an administrator and things like grant writing and publicity and programming and all those things. Mm. And so when I graduated, I had already done an internship with the Rochester Philharmonic and gained some practical experience there. But it was really through some experiences with the Civic Orchestra of Chicago that Fifth House Ensemble was born. So through that program, we were able to program concerts in neighborhood spaces. And I remember a particular performance where I was programming my first chamber music concert at Indian Boundary Park. And I should say, chamber music was always a love throughout my conservatory training. I actually always programmed a chamber music concert in addition to my academic requirements every semester, just because I loved it. So in a way, I was kind of training for the career that I wanted while I was training for the career that I thought I would have on the side. And so what was really great is that programming some of those concerts here in Chicago, I started to play for audiences who weren't my peers or adjudicators or someone who was going to give me a job for the first time in my professional life. And just seeing the ways in which the decisions we made around the type of music we played, how we presented it, the types of conversations we started in the room, and the where and how of every performance made such a huge difference in terms of how people connected. And also that the effects we were having, you know, the feedback we got from people was so far outside what we would normally think about when we're programming a concert, which is, you know, what's the music? How do I play this note? We were getting feedback, you know, like what I heard from a Chicago firefighter who was just saying the thing that he picked up from our performance was the nonverbal communication, which connected with him. This is his first classical music concert. It connected with him because that's what he and his fellow firefighters do when they've got all their equipment on and it's a life and death thing. They have to communicate using their eyes and their bodies where to go next. So it kind of led us to form Fifth House with the idea of pushing beyond the perceived limits of classical music. The idea that we want to make sure that we explore the many ways that we as musicians can be useful to the world around us that go beyond playing an instrument, playing a concert, or teaching someone to play music, and how people can reconnect with music in their daily lives.
It's extraordinary how your approach to music itself, the art of music, is so outward looking. You're really looking at how it can affect anyone, and not just a self-interested or self-indulgent practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing that's really beautiful about music is that we all learn to make music at such an early age. And somewhere along the way, we've been told that professionals are the ones who can do that in public. So I think one of the things that I would most hope to do is to help people to remember that you don't have to be a professional, that it's a birthright. It's something that you can do every day, and it actually is one of the best ways to connect with new people.
Where did the phrase fifth house come from?
So in astrology, the fifth house is the house of creativity and pleasure and the arts. And we wanted a name that would encompass the idea that Fifth House would be about more than only playing music, that a lot of the performances and the educational programs we would run would engage many different kinds of media and storytelling and art forms. And in the way that this program does, it also engages partners that are completely outside of the art creatively in the process. So we knew we wanted something that would encompass the broad vision that we had at the time.
So let's look at the idea that this program you're performing on October 7th is centered around. I mentioned before, it's titled Degenerate Art. And who's deciding that this art is degenerate?
So one of the things that's really interesting is that we're covering a wide range of how this term can be applied. It starts with the idea that art for a long time was made for the state. So, you know, for that purpose, we're using a Shostakovich trio. And Shostakovich very famously wrote music for the regime, but he put coded messages in there of resistance. And so, you know, at the time when he was, you know, making music that was supposed to be like nationalist and celebrating that, he was also putting his own spin on it internally, which if you listen carefully or know what to look for, you can definitely recognize.
Just a reminder to listeners that Shostakovich lived in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s at the height of the Soviet regime in Russia.
Correct. Yes. And then we move on to a couple of composers who wrote in concentration camps. So Erwin Schulhoff, his Six Esquisses de Jazz, and also the Messiaen Quartet for the End of Time. Both of them written under different circumstances, but within the context of being confined to those environments. And for us, that's an example of music being used as a way to express yourself and to get yourself out of really difficult circumstances. So we'll be telling a bit of stories about how those pieces came to be and what they did for the people who wrote and listened to them.
Back in the 90s, WMUK received a series of recordings that a major label had produced called Antarta Musik, that I believe is the, if you translate that from the German, you get the phrase degenerate art. And so the phrase you're using does come from Nazi-era Germany and the regime that singled out thousands of artists and musicians for punishment and death.
Absolutely. And there were degenerate art exhibits in the field of visual art. So it is a term that was born in that specific era, but we're applying it a little bit more broadly to help understand ways in which art has been censored or silenced or oppressed throughout time. And also the ways in which art has been used to transport people from one place to another. So that's an interesting way to look. And then, you know, the last person who's around sort of a similar era would be Ernest Toch, his quartet for oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and viola. He's an Austrian composer who actually went into exile and was able to flee from oppression in 1933. So he actually moved to the United States and had a successful career after that. So we're featuring his piece as an example of someone who made it from one place to the other. And, you know, similarly, we have on the program as well a work at the end of the program, which sort of highlights the ways in which we hope that art can be present in all of our lives in a similar way. When we did this program in Chicago, one of the most exciting parts of the program for us was to be able to connect it to the work that we do currently within organizations that serve people experiencing or transitioning from homelessness. And a lot of what we do in those environments is to bring creative music making and composition into the space as a way of helping participants tell their story. So when we did this program in Chicago, we actually invited women from Deborah's Place to be in our audience with us. And at the end of the show, when we are performing Jevsky's Les Moutons de Panurge, which is a participatory piece for both musicians on stage and musicians in the audience, they were some of the most enthusiastic participants. So we're really hoping that our audiences in Kalamazoo will make wonderful music with us as well for that piece.
I think listeners here in Kalamazoo are wondering if during the concert you will talk and about each piece before we hear it, the circumstances under which it was written, just to give that kind of context. Are you comfortable doing that in Fifth House Ensemble?
You know what? Communication with the audience has been a core tenet of what we do from the very beginning, and that happens in a variety of ways. So there are some pieces in the program that will receive a verbal introduction. There are some pieces that you will see super titled information both before and during the piece, so that there's more of a dramatic way of introducing them. And we also have some little video clips and images from propaganda films or from propaganda images that have been pulled from the time periods that are attached to the pieces that are on the program as well. So there are multiple modes in which you'll get a hint for how these pieces fit together on the program. But we'll also be doing a pre-concert talk and a post-concert discussion to fill in any blanks as well.
I'm talking to flutist Melissa Nahn of Fifth House Ensemble, which appears in Kalamazoo in a concert at 7:30 p.m. on October 7th at Kalamazoo College as part of the Connecting Chords Festival. And your website again?
It's www.fifth-house.com. So it's all spelled out, fifth-house.com.
Okay. You know, Melissa, music... I get that music can be very utilitarian. You know, you can find happy music for public occasions. You can make sad music for funerals. But the idea of telling a composer to stick to writing music that celebrates the state, how does an artist even get around that in his or her head?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting question. And actually, the very beginning of the show has a little bit of a skit to it when we do the Shostakovich to get at that very thing. So you've got some people who will, you know, understand that their survival depends on enthusiastic participation. And you've got other people who will do it like biting their tongue the entire time. And there will be others who will create moments of resistance and use it as an opportunity to express what they truly believe. So, you know, if you listen to Shostakovich's music, the piece that he wrote for this particular, or the piece that we chose for this program, is more on the surface a happy, joyful, cute little piece. But it's interesting because if you actually listen to it through a certain lens, you can tell that he's kind of rolling his eyes. There are much more explicit examples of that in his symphonic work, of course.
I know. What's so special about any composer's voice or artist's voice is that they found a way to say something that feels right but is brand new to you, even a folk song or something that where the words just work out perfectly and you realize they've captured something. To have it anything but a personal expression seems kind of impossible. I think I'm rambling at this point, but...
No, you're totally right. And, you know, I think that it's really interesting now that we can go back and look at those codes. When we did the show in Chicago, we did it in partnership with a graffiti art organization. And a lot of what they were teaching us is how do you hide codes in street art? And similarly, when you're listening to a piece of music, if you know what to look for, composers throughout time have signed their name into or put hidden messages into the pieces that they write. So since I know you're a flutist as well, you've probably had the experience of playing the last page of Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony. And, you know, there's just this beating over the head of the same note over and over and over.
D major.
If you listen to it in a certain... Yeah, I mean, if you listen to it in a certain way, it's like, oh, how celebratory. But if you listen to it in another way, it's, wow, we're really being beaten over the head. You know, so it's a way for composers to speak without using words. And, you know, even songs that have been used in patriotic ways. So, for instance, Somewhere Over the Rainbow is on this program. That's a song that got blacklisted during the McCarthy era. So even songs that were written for a particular purpose may find themselves being censored depending on who is in charge at the moment.
So pieces drawn from regimes in Germany, Russia, and even the United States, all featured in this program by Fifth House Ensemble on October 7th. And it's been quite a tease listening to you talk about this. I think there's a lot more that we could talk about, but let's leave it there for now. And I hope you have a great concert here in Kalamazoo for the Connecting Chords Festival. I just want to thank you for talking about it, Melissa.
Thank you. We're really looking forward to it. We're looking forward to the conversation and to make music with all of you.